which is Duty, the Royal Talisman. And this subject is of the most important consideration, duty, but at the same time, it is also one of the most confusing. It's confusing because it's not always apparent what our duty is. And sometimes, even when we do have a clear understanding of what our duty is, it seems to conflict with other duties. And of course, that is the situation we find Arjuna in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. And our title here today, The Royal Talisman, is suggestive of the importance of duty, performance of duty. What is a talisman? Well, a talisman is said to be some type of charm that possesses the power when worn by someone to protect, to guide, and to be beneficial to them. And so that is what duty does. And we might say that one of the central messages of the Bhagavad Gita is basically the importance of our right performance of our duties in everyday life. And another confusing thing about duty, in spite of its being so important, is very often it's confusing because people tell us what our duty is. And sometimes we get conflicting suggestions, to put it mildly, of what our duty should be, what we should be doing, who are we going to follow, and what do I feel is my duty. So it's an important subject for us to consider. And we might say it's sort of the culmination of our consideration this month on practical theosophy, because the dutiful application of theosophical principles in daily life is the purest heart and soul of practical theosophy. And it is our duty, but we have to understand what those principles are, of course. So let's begin then with a few words from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna addressing Arjuna on the importance of duty. And there are excerpts, just a few excerpts. So he says in chapter 3, it is better to do one's own duty, even though it be devoid of excellence, than to perform another's duty well. It is better to perish in the performance of one's own duty. The duty of another is full of danger. And then at the end of the book, or the end of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, he embellishes this message a little bit, where he says, the performance of the duties of a man's own particular calling, although devoid of excellence, is better than doing the duty of another, however well performed. And he who fulfills the duties obligated by nature does not incur sin. A man's own natural duty, even though stained with faults, ought not to be abandoned. For all human acts are involved in fall, as the fire is wrapped in smoke. And then he adds later, being bound by all past karma to thy natural duties, thou, O son of Kunti, wilt involuntarily do from necessity that which in thy folly thou wouldst not do. So, what is it about the performance of one's natural duty? Well, we'll soon find out that it requires the utmost will, desire, feeling, wisdom, and power of an individual for the continuance performance of one's duty in the face of all obstacles. But like that talisman, if persisted in or even practiced to the best of one's ability as much as one can, it will unlock and develop all these powers of soul that will protect, guide, and benefit the individual in life. As Krishna says, even a small practice of this yoga will deliver a man from great risk. So we said that the dutiful application of theosophical principles in daily life is the heart and soul of practical theosophy. So let's begin with a basic expression of some of these theosophical principles. And the first is the unity and boundlessness of the eternal root of all being, which we have different names for, but we're speaking of that same one eternal reality. And the fundamental identity with that deific principle in the spiritual essence of all beings. In other words, all beings, human or otherwise, are fundamentally one with and inseparable from that divine source. And so, as we are all part of that unity, it is the basis of our unity and interdependence in life with all beings, spiritually and physically. And as that source is in and through and around every being, every manifested thing and form of being is alive and conscious in some degree. And the manifestation of that innate life and constitution of consciousness that manifests in that being is an expression of its natural duty. So in the East, they have a term for the manifestation of this natural, innate quality of conscious and power and life in a being or a thing, and it's called Dharma. So we might say that it is the Dharma of fire to burn and give light and heat. And it is the Dharma of water to reflect, to moisten, and to move, ripple. It is the Dharma of the mineral to cohese. It is the Dharma of plants to reach out in their sensitivity to light and moisture and provide nourishment. We might say it's the Dharma of the animal kingdom in their instinctive nature to survive, to propagate, to move. And in our human nature, we have our own particular quote, Dharma, which is the manifestation of our own complete nature. Another idea, basic idea in theosophy, is that all degrees and forms of life in all departments of nature change, move, and evolve according to the law of cycles and cause and effect. In the human kingdom, we see this as reincarnation and karma. They are the basis of hope and responsibility. for human beings. But it does suggest to us that our dharma or our duty as human beings will change, will move, will evolve according to the circumstances of one life or many lives, or the different stages of an incarnation. We have a different natural duty in our youth to learn, to grow, begin to develop all our potentialities. And then we added the life, we added the stage of being a student, where we continue our learning and prepare ourselves for the career or work we will do when we enter adulthood. And perhaps part of that will include raising a family and bringing forth children, or working for humanity in some other way as a family. And then, of course, we enter the latter part of our incarnation, whereas there is the culmination, the fruition of all our learning and effort, and the opportunity to share and pass that on to the younger generations. So our natural duty changes, and it is very much influenced by our karma, our circumstances of life, but it's also bound to ourselves as spiritual beings, as soul beings, incarnating in a long series of life. So we have a natural duty of the soul that is the same throughout all those incarnations, as well as a natural duty that applies in any one life. The third idea, basic theosophical principle, is that of evolution. Now, the evolution for human beings is determined by self-induced and self-devised effort, and it is a basis for our self-reliance. So, in a sense, being human and having the capacity for self-consciousness, for free will and choice, gives us a natural duty to be self-reliant, to determine our own path of development and growth. And all our ultimate goal may be the same as another human being. The path we will take, the means we will take, will be appropriate to us and will be determined by our choices. In fact, we might say that great differences in power, capacity, and conditions among different human beings is self-determined. It's the way we've decided as individuals, and sometimes collectively as individuals, as to how to conduct our lives. So the question comes up, is the natural duty different for different human beings? Is my duty the same as yours? And although there are natural duties common to all human beings, one's individual natural duty is determined by the karmic conditions of a particular human being in this incarnation. So, what are those karmic conditions that may affect one's natural duty? Of course, the physical body and circumstances. We may be born into a particular nation or family. We may have a condition of education, of resources, which gives us opportunities to acquire some expertise in some area, to provide a service, and that becomes our natural duty. Of course, having a physical body, there's also the natural duty of providing it with the best and proper food, water, exercise, environment, and to do what we can to provide that opportunity to others But we there are different, besides this physical, we also have an emotional nature and a intellectual nature that comes to us under karma. And so we have a natural duty to express and to use the best we have of our emotional nature, of our mind. And of course, we can only ask ourselves to do the best with what we have. And some have a greater capacity of heart or intellect than another, but each does the best that they can, expresses the natural power and capacity and dharma of their nature. And we've already talked about how the karma of one's life can change over time, and thus the duties, the responsibilities change as well. But then we said that beside these individual duties, there are natural duties that are common to the human condition, the dharma of being a human being. From the perspective of theosophy, being a soul being, a spiritual being, divine in essence, and yet incarnated in a physical form. So we might say one of our essential duties as human beings is duty to oneself, which, as we said, of course, is care of the body. But as Mr. Judge points out, care of the soul and learning what that soul is also an important part of our duty, which many neglect or not even aware exists as a responsibility. And of course, we said because we are self-conscious beings, we have the responsibility to exert our free will and choice, to not be passive, to have the courage of our convictions, and to take responsibility for our actions, and to choose the best, as Krishna says, do the best that thou can see to do. But in spite of these duties to ourselves, we also have the duties to others. What is due to other human beings in general? And certainly, that's recognition of they being soul beings in different degrees of evolution as ourselves. And so it involves respect, sincerity, compassion, charity, a willingness to help one another and learn from another. There is our duty to humanity in general, the realization that humanity itself is a collectivity of souls engaging in a long period of evolution on this globe of ours, and that we're all interconnected in that progress. And so, what might be our duty to humanity, the humanity of soul beings incarnated together? And that is to form a nucleus, a center, whether that nucleus and center is within just ourselves or whether it's in association with other human beings. And together from that center, to work to uplift the mind and heart of humanity. Because, like ourselves, our fellow human beings are divine in essence, but incarnated. And some are so affected by the matter and conditions of the form they find them in that they have lost memory or awareness or ignorance of their nature. Not that we have complete knowledge of that, but maybe we have a glimpse of it, a glimpse of that perspective, and we know the benefit of it. And so we do our best to those that are willing to listen and ready to listen to share. As it says in the Voice of the Silence, to pour forth our knowledge into another bed, to be like a light in the darkness, to search out those who know still less than thou. And then we have the duty to life, to the ocean of life around us, the many different degrees of being that make up our earth, that make up our bodies, that make up the world we live in and its environment. And they're all conscious and alive on their own path of evolution, all impressionable and giving off an impression. And just as we strive to elevate the mind and heart of those self-conscious beings like ourselves we call human, we have a duty to uplift the awareness, the consciousness, the matter of those lives around us, because we are inseparable from them. As we uplift and sacrifice for them, we only help ourselves as well. And to the extent we neglect that duty or abuse it, we only impair our own progress. So, recognizing these general duties, what are some of the obstacles, the obstructions to the performance of our natural duties? I mean, it's clear to state them, but so difficult to follow through in their performance. Well, of course, there's the obstacle of our senses, the various things we hear, we see, we taste, we smell, we touch, that give us pleasure and pain. That's an obstacle. Because whether sometimes those duties involve the experience of pleasurable or painful sensations, and so we might avoid them. Or we might go after one duty that we perceive because it is very pleasant and avoid another one, which is just as important because it's painful. And then there are just the whole field of our desires. And this is a complicated one, the most complicated and difficult because it is our desire nature, which is most prominent in our human nature at this particular time in our evolution. And we feel the pull of our desires, the attraction and repulsion, the likes and dislikes for all certain things. And we know that anything we do requires our desire. But sometimes our desires are weak in a certain direction in the performance of our duties, and in others, they're stronger because of our likes and dislikes and the anticipation of the reward. Some important duties seem to have no reward, and others seem to have great reward and benefit to our personally. And so we might find ourselves more involved with one duty or another. And then there is the field of our passions, particularly our negative ones. How often does our fear or our hate or our envy or our greed or our doubt get in the way of performance of what we know we should be doing, but hesitate to do? The Bhagavad Gita gives us an interesting perspective on our natural duties and the obstacles. It speaks of three qualities which affect all of nature and our human nature. It speaks of sattva, quality of goodness, of rajas, the quality of action, and tamas, the quality of inertia or indifference. And we cannot escape feeling the awareness of these qualities because they are part of our embodied nature, and we are embodied in nature, and so we feel them. But as spiritual beings, we can learn to observe and transcend them But while in bodies, we feel them. And sometimes the desire for goodness and peace gets in the way of performing that which is difficult and may involve conflict and controversy, but necessary to be done. And sometimes our attachment, as we said, to action, to desire, to reward, gets in the way to our attraction or repulsion from the performance of our duty. But then Thomas is a very interesting one. It's indifference, it's inertia, it's the feeling of not caring, of knowing one's duty, but being too lazy or too satisfied or too comfortable to get out of it and do what needs to be done. And so, of course, desire is very important there to get us motivated to the performance of our duty. So these are all the obstructions. But theosophy does point out a path. It does give us a means by which we can perform our natural duty if we understand that we are essentially soul beings, spiritual beings, incarnated in a body, yet divine in essence. And keeping that general theosophical principle in mind, what can be our duties that will help us perform our duties to ourselves, perform our duties to others, perform our duties to humanity, perform our duties to life, and get past all these obstacles? What can we practice? What can we do? Well, the first talk of this month had to do with this earth experience being a laboratory and a school. So, as soul beings, our experience in life, embodied life, gives us the opportunity to learn the truth about nature. Not just physical nature, but nature in its entirety. It's psychic, it's an intellectual, it's spiritual, it's divine nature. And that complete knowledge of life we call spiritual knowledge, because spirit embraces and involves all things. Spirit, in fact, crystallized becomes matter, and matter etherealized becomes spirit. Spirit and matter are all two interdependent aspects of the same one reality. So the search for truth is the search for the spiritual and the material understanding of life. And once we have discovered, or even a bit of it, of that knowledge, we're going to call it theosophy, or divine wisdom, knowledge of the laws of all the great departments of nature. It then becomes the duty, in whatever degree, to share that with others and to make it a means by which we live according to the dictates of what we perceive to be truth. And if we perceive something to be truth and we're willing to live by it, to share with others who are learning, who want to know the truth. What else might be a duty? Well, if we're here to learn, we are continuously surrounded by teachers, teachers in school, our parents, our classes, and those great beings we call Mahatmas, the preservers of this spiritual wisdom down through the ages. And so there is a duty to honor those, whatever degree of teachers, to honor the truth that they teach us, to put it into practice, and as we said, to share that with those who know less than ourselves. So we're all here learning together. We all are different degrees of progress. We all have different degrees of accomplishment and different degrees of ignorance of that complete knowledge. And many of the things we do are the result of acting in ignorance of our own spiritual nature, the laws of nature, and we cause, therefore, problems for ourselves and others. So, recognizing that we are as vulnerable to that as others, we have a duty of compassion, of charity, of forgiveness, not only to others, but to ourselves as well. A recognition that the faults of ourselves are in others and the faults of others in ourselves, to be as aware as we can of our own faults, to work with them. And if we come across another who's demonstrating those faults, not to be too harsh with them, not to be too harsh with ourselves, but to help one another. And that is our duty. And that is the message, of course, of all the great reformers, spiritual saviors of humanity. We have a duty, though, as incarnated souls in this physical body, to with a personality, a lower nature, an acquired nature by karma, to discipline it, to make it, to tune it up, to make it an instrument, to not let the horse we ride take us where it wants to, but guide it gently with the reins, with our own understanding of who and what we are. That's what self-discipline is. It's not a harsh punishment, but rather a guidance, benevolence, directed towards life around us, life within ourselves, life in nature, with the understanding that we are all one and interconnected and all divine in essence. So through that self-discipline and the capacity for choice, having recognized where we are in this life with our karmic disposition and our strengths and our weaknesses, to determine, as it says in our declaration, that the Lodge regards as Theosophists all those engaged in the true service of humanity, and we mentioned what that was, and it's devoted to make themselves better able to help and teach others, make themselves more fit to help and teach others as souls, make ourselves better. And that, of course, requires self-discipline, the search for truth, self-control, sharing, compassion, involves all that. There's the duty of realizing that we cannot achieve success in our duty without helping another achieve success in theirs. So we have a duty, a natural duty, to support, to help, and to warn, if necessary, the potential dangers of another's actions, and to be willing to accept warning from others who we trust, who we value their experience, that we might be heading into difficulty. So we are all part of nature, but we all are essentially part of that sacred principle, that one divine essence. And so ultimately, as expressed in the different devotional traditions, we have a duty to the divine in nature, the divine ourselves, the divine in every other human being. To know it, to honor it through expression to the best we can, knowing that in any one life we cannot do it completely, but to ever hold it as the ideal and ever strive to make it a living expression in our life. So the main message this morning is duty is not what comes from outside, what you're told to do. Duty is innate within you. It's the natural expression of who you are under karma in this life and as a human being. And if you understand those principles and you look into your own nature and where you are, your natural duty as a human being, as in general and specifically in this life, will become clear. And even though you have the obstacles, you have the suggestions in the devotional books and theosophy and all the traditions around the world is how to overcome those obstacles. Because duty has ever been the royal talisman, the ultimate charm in helping us become better, compassionate, more effective human beings. So we'll stop here and give you the opportunity to express your thoughts and questions on this subject. MDW.
Excuse us. So the Dalai Lama is right. Be kind, he says. Is that what it comes down to?
Be kind.
Yeah, that emotion of feeling connected to everyone.
Well, that emotion or that feeling of connectedness, we might not say is a sentiment. It's not a sentiment, it's not an emotional thing. It may be expressed in our nature in an emotional way. But it's ultimately an awareness of the unity and interconnectedness of life. It's a spiritual recognition of the ultimate law of our interdependence and connectedness with the all. So kindness is treating another as we would want to be treated as spiritual beings. It's an expression of treating other to preserve the harmony, the best within them, and not disturb their nature, but to ever support nature. Kindness is working with nature. If nature is ever working to improve life, we know sometimes it does it gently, but sometimes it does it through bumps too, does it not? To get us back on the path. In that sense, suffering may turn out to be the greatest kindness because it wakes us up to what we should do. So sometimes our kindness demands a gentle reminder. And sometimes it involves encouragement and praise where necessary and appropriate. But yes, it's all an expression of love, and it's the same message as the Buddha, Jesus, the Dalai Lama, Plato in his own way, Pythagoras. He spoke of the music and harmony of the spheres and nature. MHW.
So, when we are aware of our duty that has presented itself to us, are we then, I guess the word, I don't know if the word compel would be too strong, but is it suggested then when we're looking at the duty that we have to do, should we be looking at it as to how that will benefit others rather than ourselves?
Well, let me try to rephrase that or you or understand it. You're saying if we feel compelled from within for the performance of a duty, and it might be an ending aspect of our lives, should we give consideration as to whether we are, what is our motive, whether we're doing it for ourselves or another? So, interesting point. Now, Krishna has some thoughts on that, but before we consider those, any ideas on that? Does the motive by which we perform our natural duty, we say we have natural duties, but does the motive by which we perform make a difference? Any thoughts? Yes? MHW, unmute, please.
Well, we would think motive has to be taken into consideration for any action that we're going to do, right?
Yes. So Krishna talks about the importance of performing the right performance of our natural duties. And the right performance involves performing them as an act of devotion to either the interests of others or the interests of the all of life, but also giving up the hope or the expectation of any personal reward for it. And why is that? Because our natural state as spiritual beings is to live, to serve life. That's why we're here. We incarnate. We come into this condition to raise, to elevate life, and to learn through that experience how we can do that better, how we can better recognize our unity with all. So it's a dual purpose. That's our natural reason for being here. And so when we feel in our everyday consciousness that dutiful inclination to do something to the best of our ability, to carry out our responsibilities, to help another, that's our higher nature speaking directly to us. And that's our higher self illuminating us with what is right to be done. But like a dream, it has to come through our personality. And just as in a dream, the higher visions of the night can be distorted as they come through, sometimes those high aspirations of duty can be tainted with personal reward and expectation. And all the performance of one's duty, even those stained with fault, even though imperfect, it still should be done, Krishna says. It's even if we notice that there is some pride or self-regard or whatever, we still need to perform our duty because it is an expression of our highest nature. It is, as human beings, as the fire is surrounded in smoke, as human beings, the way they are, who we are right now with our personal nature, it's very difficult to purely express our highest motives without some tinge of personal desire. But as we develop, as we grow, as we make an effort to become less, more impersonal, more connected, more understanding the whole of life, we'll gradually learn to take that same impulse and express it without an expectation of personal reward, but as an expression of our own natural duty, leave the results to the law, and if we are benefited, then it is only because we benefit the whole of life. But even in the performance of our duty, if we seem to encounter difficulty, there is no need to run away from it or avoid the duty. One's still performing it indifferent to the outcome because there's no expectation for personal benefit. Rather, the knowledge that we are doing the best we can under the circumstances with the right motive. And the results will eventually come. Any other questions or comments? MDW?
We are told, excuse me, when we are told that when we are in need, there's aids that we can turn to just to help remind us of what our struggle is. And a reference for many are the paramitas. And there are seven of those. And if we use our laws of correspondence and analogy, we are in the fourth round and so forth in this material plane. So the fourth paramita is this indifference to pleasure and pain. this detachment from the personal nature. And we live in the reality. I'm looking at each one of us. We're separate. That's the illusion that we're fighting, and the only way we can dissolve that is through the heart.
Yes. So the question is, or the comment relates to the idea of the paramitas. Now, that's from the voice of the silence. And HBB tells us it's written for the few. In other words, those few who begin to perceive a higher duty or a higher path or a higher way they want to live, and they need or they're searching for advice, instruction as how to do that. And so for those, indifference to pleasure and pain is a virtue they try to practice. But for those of us who are not yet at that state, it's very difficult to be indifferent to pleasure and pain. We're confronted with pleasure and pain all the time. And sometimes it might even seem heartless to be indifferent to pleasure and pain because we really don't even understand what that means yet. So, what are we to do? Well, we can begin with, as said, as Krishna tells us, to do the best we can. And rather than being indifferent to pleasure and pain, rather than focusing on the effects, the conditions around us, focus on our inner motive, as was brought out before. What is our motive? Why are we doing it? And ask ourselves, can I do this for a better reason? Can I change the purpose of my action? So, this idea gets into our very next chat, which is, and we can develop this idea as we proceed, can you discuss the convergence of duty, like in a household, a town, a city, or a state? And then, of course, this theosophist. What is the golden thread of duty that can be applied as to whether we're a household or with our family or within a family at any stage of our life, in a community, in a country? And then, of course, the world is large and it's theosophist. What is the inner threat? What is the common duty in all of that? And as was pointed out by one of our contributors, it's kindness, it's compassion, it's the attempt to be unselfish, it's recognition that we are all soul beings on a path of spiritual development. So whether we are dealing with other human beings in our home, in our town, in our city, our state, our fellow theosophists, sister theosophists, we are all working together to help one another be better soul beings, be better helpers of the world in which we live, and be better, more wiser beings. And that's the convergence of our duty. And if we can learn it even just in the household, that's very important. And then we can take that to the town or a city or a state. But of course, let's not neglect ourselves as individuals. We have duties within ourselves, which become the foundation of all these things. So all can be done together. We're all connected. We don't, even as hermits, we are not, even if we were in a hermit situation, we would not be completely disconnected from life. So our duty would be the same. MHW, did you have another contribution along this chat?
Yes, the whole idea of unity and diversity, That's one of the things with theosophy is that we are all bringing the diverse ways that we were brought up, the way we see the world, our education. We're bringing all of that to our meetings, to each other, which is the idea of unity. So when we're thinking of duty, say in a household, even though we living in a household, we do have certain ideas and functions that have been put on us because we're in a family type of a situation. But we still have our minds think differently. We have different motives. But the idea that we're all one, especially in a family situation, we can still look at the idea of being diverse in unity and be able to address the whole idea of people's duty. And we can come together and function as one, so to speak, in the accomplishment of that duty.
That's very true. And as that contribution was presented, it reminded what to our mind the ultimate duty. And Krishna brings it out at the end when he says, act as seemeth best unto thee. After all is said and done, whether we're in a home, whether we're in a town, a city, or state, whether we're the humblest devotee or the highest adept, we're all soul beings in different degrees of development, of the same divine essence, in an endless cycle of repetitive evolutions, ever aspiring upward towards greater degrees of perfection. What can be our ultimate duty in spite of whatever failures, whatever condition we sink into? Our ultimate duty is to ever keep trying. To never give up, to never abandon, but to ever realize that this condition I'm in is temporary. I outlast this. The condition I'm in is a temporary experience. Yes, it created it. But I myself never was not, nor will ever hereafter cease to be. And so I can ever perform that duty of trying, of making an effort, fulfilling my natural dharma as a spiritual eternal being, to ever keep trying. And with that in mind, there's always hope. And there was always a sense of dignity and responsibility, self-responsibility. Even we're told even the greatest savior at some point had to make a promise to themselves that they would ever keep trying. And so achieve their success. So with that, we'll conclude our meeting for this morning, but did want to remind you about our program this coming Wednesday, ULT Day, and to join all join together with students from, as we said, from Washington, New York, Philadelphia, Canada, and some from other parts of the world and country, hopefully. The time is right for others to join us, and we'll have a very great opportunity for the mutual expression and understanding of this great mission of the Theosophical Movement and part of ULT in that effort. So thank you. Our meeting is finished. Make it a great day.
Thank you very much. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.